Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Hurricane Irma is the kind of storm that changes things. It's a turning point in just how seriously the threat of a hurricane is taken. Its size and ferocity set records in the Atlantic and spurred unprecedented evacuations from the entire state of Florida. One of the people who stayed behind to work with emergency management personnel was Penny Taylor. She's chair of the Collier County Commission. We spoke earlier today about how she feels the county responded to the storm, the lessons this storm brought, and what concrete actions can be taken to better prepare for the next storm. I want to go back to the days before Hurricane Irma hit, after it had torn through islands in the Atlantic and raked Cuba and blown through the Keys. What was going through your mind as Irma slowly made its way towards landfall in southwest Florida?
This was a storm that you paid attention to. This was a storm that really made us all pay attention to it. It was here, it was there, it wasn't, it was. And, you know, I was over at the EOC and, you know, we were making predictions. I wasn't, of course, but the experts were talking about storm surge. They were talking about the areas that they were concerned about flooding. You know, when it became clear that it was going to be more of a water event than it was going to be a wind event, not that you minimize 142 miles an hour, which is what FPNL has clocked, that they thought this came through at this early point. That's the number they're using. But when you talk about a 15-foot storm surge, then you realize this is a whole different, this is something that this community has never seen. Extraordinarily, and you know, if you believe in God, if you believe in a God or your God, the hand worked in our favor, because as it left Key West, it moved 50 to 70 miles eastward, which put it less storm surge, less of winds to push the water into land. And we knew there was going to be flooding, but we didn't know how much flooding, and that was, I wouldn't say it was a relief, but it was something that we hung on to for hope. I've never been in a hurricane that had an eye of a hurricane before. I've been in hurricanes, but not that one. And there is fury, and it's amazing to me, the power. I worried about our folks that hadn't evacuated. I thank God that our governor kept talking about evacuation long before we were aware of this hurricane, but when we knew it was coming, evacuation was essential, and so many people had already left. You know, it's an event that hopefully won't come for another 57 years, and that was Donna of 57 years ago. After I visited Everglades City recently, I understood why in 1960 they decided to move the seat of the county to Naples, because of what I saw there. We're safe. Luckily, there were no serious injuries during this hurricane. That's a blessing. We have, of course, injuries afterwards, and it's not to be minimized, but I think the county has done a good job of finding shelter for folks, and certainly, the governor has been just a beacon in moving people and getting them out of harm's way.
I wanted to ask you about shelter for people, because from what I'm hearing out of Everglades City, there's not shelter down there for Everglades City residents, and a lot of those homes are in pretty bad shape.
It's my understanding from the folks who live there. First of all, yes, they are. And no, there's no shelter. But my understanding, a lot of the folks don't want to leave their houses, and you can understand that. And the other aspect is maybe they've left their houses, but they're with friends. We're not talking about a community of 20 or 30,000 people. So, it's a close-knit community. Luckily, the people who have homes down there that are winter visitors are not there. So they're the natives, the folks that are there year-round, are pretty connected and help each other, and it's my understanding that that's where everybody is with other people. At least that's the word I got yesterday.
Except for the people that are just wanting to stay at their house, even if it is covered in mold.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Mold is the least of the problems.
Yeah. Mold, bacteria, silt, dirt. It's apparently a mess. What did you think? I mean, obviously, it made it clear to you why the county seat was moved from Everglades City after that last storm that was as big as this out of Everglades City. But what did you think when you were walking around down there in Everglades City recently?
You know, I on Monday, I drove around our city and I saw the damage, and actually CNN put it on national news that this, you know, Naples fared, Collier County fared pretty well regarding structural damage, that we enforced our codes. And I was very proud of that. Going down to Everglades City, you know, when you drive down those streets and you see these homes and, yeah, there's damage, but then you see all their belongings out at curbside, piled high, stoves and couches and chairs and just piled in a pile because the storm surge came in there. That's a whole other awareness of what this storm did. But I can tell you, the people that I saw are resilient. I am so proud of the fishermen down there. There were 20, they had 26, the mayor told me, 26 commercial fishing boats in Everglades City. Not one of them was damaged in this storm, and it's because they know where to go. They know how to hide. Those people, they live at the doorstep of the Everglades. They love their lives, and they're going to stay there, and they're going to recover. And we will do everything we can to assist in that, of course.
So when you saw the storm surge remnants, I mean, what happened after the storm surge that happened in Everglades City, did that kind of give you a chill? Because those are the kind of levels that they were looking at actually hitting in Naples, which is a bigger city.
Yes, yes. And so then my mind went to the fact that right now we have two preeminent scientists, Dr. Michael Savarese and Dr. Peter Shang, who are going to be studying Collier County for sea level rise. And, you know, sea level rise has to factor into this. And they are going to be studying how we make our beaches more resilient, how we slow down storm surge. What can we do, not just, we can't build a dike around this community, but it's more dunes and vegetation and to minimize, to slow down the storm surge. Now, if it's a 15-foot storm surge, all bets are off. But, you know, 2, 3, 4 feet, I believe we had probably 3 feet, maybe 2.5 feet in my neighborhood, as I live in the city, on the you know, the east part of the city next to Goodlett. How can we make our city more resilient? And I am, you know, this is also tying in. Here we have a storm that has broken all records, being in the Atlantic, at least at that point it did. I'm not sure Maria isn't right there beside it. And, you know, the scientists have told us stronger storms, more frequent, you know, more threat to places who live on the shore, and we have to pay attention now. So what it does, what I did is I moved to, instead of saying, oh my gosh, what are we going to do, just saying, now we know what we have to do.
I talked to a Collier County resident who said to me that he saw FPNL linemen that were waiting to get to places to restore power, but they were waiting on subcontractors to clear out branches and felled trees. Do you know anything about that? Are there subcontractors that were supposed to clean out some debris, some yard debris, before the FPNL people could get out to these places to restore power?
Yes, on the Wednesday after the storm went through, so that was 2 days after, 2 to 3 days after Hurricane Irma's eye hit Collier County, the president of FPNL came to ERC and basically said, look, we have nobody. Nobody should be going in and trying to cut down trees around wires or moving the wires, even though you think you're scared. That is, you have to be trained. You have to be, it's a very dangerous business, and it's not something that anybody should do except to train crews. So they had to bring in these special crews. FPNL contracts with these special crews. In fact, I met somebody last night from Missouri, Yeah, Missouri. No, he's Phoenix, from Phoenix, a big company that contracts with FEMA, and that's all they're doing is getting these trees unwrapped from the wire so that power can be restored. And he plans to be here until through Thanksgiving doing that. Not that it doesn't mean we're not going to have power, but there's a lot more work to be done. And I think it's to clear the trees underneath these wires. This Naples, City of Naples is a tree city. They pride themselves on Tree City USA. But as we're moving into this, and, you know, I asked the president, his name is Mr. Selagi, what was your biggest challenge? He said it's trees. The trees are what down the wires. Now, if we'd had a storm surge and we'd been flooded and lines were underground, then there's another challenge, has to do with water, salt water, corrosion of all the power equipment on the ground, and then you have to clean the wires. And so there's a whole other, there's no silver bullet with this.
There's no either easy answer really either, because I also talked to an arborist who said that it's the number of trees that are here that help to slow down storms like this. They do serve as a windbreak and help avoid a lot of structural damage.
You know, I think this is a conversation that I would like to talk about, to understand about that. For instance, you have folks, natives here, who have deliberately kept their trees a certain height around their house, knowing that if the storm comes through, they don't have to worry about branches falling on their house. Yet you have arborists who say, oh, don't you do that, because the trees are going to be damaged, and, you know, you can't recover from that, and you weaken the tree. We as a community, and I've heard this from the folks in Golden Gate also, will be discussing it's called after action, and this is one big topic for after action. We love our trees, we enjoy the shade, but can we do it differently? Can we harden our community against these storms? And, you know, of course, FPNL will be part of that conversation.
Speaking of conversations with FPNL, how much contact did you have with FPNL in the days after the storm as far as targeting sites that needed to have power restored very critically? Did county officials have a lot of input on what FPNL was doing and where they targeted their efforts?
Oh, yes. Now, FPNL said, first of all, what we do when we come into a community, it's hospitals, it's first responders, it's traffic intersections. You know, safety first, safety and public welfare, especially with hospitals. And then after that, they start going into the neighborhoods. And yes, the FPNL had three representatives in the EOC round the clock for several days after the storm. The president, he's visited now twice. I've got a meeting today, midday, with him. So yes, they're skilled at what they do, but yes, the county had great input. There was a very, very close working relationship between FPNL and Dan Summers and his emergency response team.
Were there any instances where you needed to, you know, because you have the locals' perspective of things that they might not notice as being kind of critical, were there any instances where you needed to kind of help guide them and point them in different directions?
We were tapped into our shelters, of course, directly. So, yes, of course. If something, you know, they're out on the field getting power restored, something goes down, we get notice of it, so then we relate it to them. It was I think it was an effective team that worked together to address these problems, these challenges. You know, that's the generator at the Collier County Sheriff's Operation, Command Operations Center went down. They didn't have air conditioning for 3 days. You know, they were able to get a generator, but things happen like this during a storm. And to me, it's amazing how we worked together and did it effectively. And I give such great credit to Dan Summers and our county staff for organizing and rehearsing again and again, if something like this ever happened, what would we do? It was a well-oiled machine that hummed day and night. And people's spirits were up. We had 16-hour shifts for a lot of the county employees who don't even, you know, would never go into an EOC where they're working. It was very rewarding to see that, and it gave, I felt very confident that the response was being well-directed. And, yeah, sure, things got missed, but then they got caught again. It's just part of an emergency. And this was a disaster, let's face it. This was a true disaster response.
Well, one of the parts of the disaster was the water system. We had sewers backing up and neighborhoods smelling like porta-potties, and it gave it definitely a disaster aroma. And at the worst, a possible health hazard. A rumor was circulating on some social media, and I wanted to give you a chance to address it, that the county commission had been asked a while back to fund generators for all the lift stations in the county, of which there are 800. But that request was denied. Now, I looked through the minutes and agendas that are on the website for a couple of years back, and I couldn't find anything. Is there any validity to that?
Yeah. You know what? I will get back to you, Julie, about that. I don't remember that under my, you know, I've been there now. I'll be going into my fourth year. I don't remember that. I doubt that that's the case. What the challenge we had was is that the trees, the mature trees in Collier County wrapped their roots around water lines. And when, or you know, and then those water mains broke, and then they fell when the trees fell, and they took down electric. So we had tremendous, you know, infrastructure was critical to get up. We were able to start pumping with trucks. We brought in, finally got some generators in. So we were, I guess, pretty much up to snuff late last week, or maybe even over the weekend, where it was normal in terms of having the lift stations work. But we also had the challenge, and understandably so, of folks in the north end who got their power right away and just decided, boy, I look at this laundry on the floor. I got to get this cleaned up. You know, I got to get back to normal. And unfortunately, that didn't help the system, but that was short-lived. People listened to the water conservation message we sent out. But yeah, I will get back to you, Julie, on that. But I don't remember that ever happening. Again, we will have great lessons to be learned from this event, and we will adapt and adjust. I am confident on that.
The way you describe it, even having a generator on every lift station would not have been a solution to the problem when tree roots were pulling up the pipes.
Oh, yeah. That was the biggest, big trees, huge trees. Trees have been there for maybe 50, 60 years in my neighborhood. There had to have been, you know, we had a steady wind. But there had to been small tornadoes, microbursts coming through. By the way, you drive down on US 41, maybe there'd be one or two power poles broken off, and the rest would be standing straight. That says that those were microbursts or tornadoes coming through. And, you know, I don't know what you do to that except keep hardening and learning and keeping up with technology and understanding that we have to change. And I have no doubt that our leadership in the county will do that.
And then, you know, going forward, like you said, there are a lot of lessons that were learned during this storm, and they're going to continue to be learned, and there are probably going to be amendments made in the way that things are planned going forward, as you mentioned, in order to prepare for things like this, because the fact that this storm did exist at all means that it can happen again. Hopefully not.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So, looking back, how would you grade the county's response to this disaster? I mean, would you give it an A or a B? I mean, how would you grade it? And what kind of things would you have changed about the way things were handled in the aftermath?
That's a really good question. You know, what can I compare it to? I have never been through a hurricane, the eye of a hurricane, so I would say I have nothing to compare it to, but having been at the EOC and having driven around the county starting on Tuesday, I think our response was was extraordinary. No, there was discomfort. Yes, a lot of power outages. Yes, there were gas lines. Yes, you know, we had some setbacks. But I think what I saw was a community and a county staff and an EOC that was guided under the calm and experienced leadership of Dan Summers, who drew in as much resources as he possibly could, not so much before the storm, but the mobilization of help afterwards it keeps on going. The different phases that you go through in a after the storm response, which is what we're in now. I've said it before, and I'll say it now. Now is the work. Now is our hard work. Before, it was just pure fear and stress. Well, on my part, not on emergency. With them, they knew what they were doing. But now it's the hard work of getting us back up, of making sure that the nation knows Florida and Naples and Collier County is open for business, to bring our tourists back here. Because I've got reports that our beaches are sound. They've got a little bit of dirt on them, but boy, oh boy, the shelling is incredible. And, you know, it's those kind of messages that we need to get our people back to work, to understand we have a tourist season in front of us. And I think our county should be very, very proud of the response of our team. I would give it an A. I really would.
And then the community itself, outside of the emergency responders and the people that were there at the EOC in this recovery, what do you think about all of the efforts that have come out of the woodwork of, you know, parents who have their kids out of school, so they're volunteering themselves and their kids to help out and make hot meals for their neighbors and drive around and try to deliver these hot meals to people that don't have electricity still? What do you think? I mean, looking around at those kinds of efforts.
Look at our community. I mean, we are Collier County, and I can only speak for Collier County, but I'm sure it's in Lee County. I'm sure it's in Hendry County and all the abutting counties. But we are Collier County, and we came together, and we helped each other. When I saw these gas lines, and I was driving around where one lane was completely shut on Airport going into Sam's, you know, things like that. You know, there were some tempers, but we kept it together and we helped each other. And I still get calls, you know, this is going on, that's going on, and I'm trying to help. Who can I go to? The outpouring of humanity, the outpouring of generosity, and the American, you know, we'll get through this. It's alive and well in Collier County. It's a very emotional subject for me. I've seen it, and I am very, very proud of our community.
A lot of people are focusing a lot on Everglades City and Immokalee. These are some of the more vulnerable parts of the county, in that there are a lot of people there that are more paycheck to paycheck type people that are kind of, you know, it's hard. They can't really handle a setback like that. What kind of things do you think going forward the county is going to be getting involved in trying to help folks in Immokalee and Everglades City right their lives?
Well, the right now going forward is housing. It's housing. We have to. We're currently under going through we kind of did what they call a windshield assessment, where we went through. We know approximately how many houses and trailers, mobile homes, are damaged. But now we're drilling down into that, and it's to determine the need for housing. Where can people go who need temporary housing? And so this is what we're hard at work doing right now. This is critical. Also, it's to bring the tourist industry back to where it needs to go, and that's going to require a lot of work on the county's part. To start marketing who we are, and as I say, our beaches are intact. Amazingly enough, less sand, but we've gone through that before. The health issue about water testing, I think it's very wise to do it, but I'm optimistic that you know, a couple of days or, you know, a week or so, everything will get back to normal. The picture in the paper today was fascinating. Here's somebody in a wetsuit testing the water, and there are beachgoers on the beach enjoying the beach. So I don't know. The fishermen will tell you that the stone crab claw season is going to be incredible because the crabs like hurricanes. It does something to them, and it makes it really something happens with the claws. Now, that's what the old-timers will tell you. It remains to be seen. But we've got a lot to look forward to.
I think I'll believe the old-timers. They kind of seem to know what they're doing.
I'm with you on that, Julie. I'm with you on that.
All right. Well, Commissioner Taylor, you have a meeting coming up on Tuesday the 26th. That is a county board meeting?
Yes.
What do you think you're going to be focusing on at that point?
Well, it'll be an interesting meeting because Dan Summers is going to give us a report on where we are and what we have left to do. And you know, that's the kind of statistics we need to hear as leaders of the community. And then we're going to be doing the normal things that we do. And I think it's important to get back to work. It's very difficult to get back to work because you're pulled in so many directions. But I think the people need to have confidence that their government is functioning and that their needs, whatever their needs, can be addressed by all of us at the government, including my four colleagues who sit on the county commission.
Did you think when you became a county board member that this would be something that you would be doing at any point?
No, ma'am. I never dreamed. I mean, you know, you always hear that, oh, yeah, we're ready. We're due for the big one. But that big one was always next year or the year after. And, you know, I was one of those people that watched this with astonishment and then horror, realizing we are going to be in the eye of this hurricane. So I never thought of it, but, you know, that's kind of what they... You know, we just have to, pull together. I'm one person. It's the whole community that's pulled together on this, from government down to my neighbors. My neighbor, she had power before I did. She ran a line across the street, and I could keep my refrigerator going, even though my house was 85 degrees. You know, that kind of personal, we care about you, things you've talked about before, Julie, it makes all the difference, and the sun is shining, and, you know, it's lovely. It hasn't rained terribly much yet, and that's good for all the folks who have houses that are damaged, especially roofs, and I'm confident that we will get through this, and we'll be stronger and smarter.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Commissioner Taylor, for joining me for the show today, and I'll let you get going. I know you have to go to a meeting with Florida Power and Light.
Yes. Well, thank you very, very much, Julie, and thank you, Collier County. And Lee County, I haven't been there, but thank you. Thank you for doing what you've done during this event. And we've come closer together, and we'll move forward.
Yeah, I think so, too. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.